Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Well, if you were to do a list of the sporting superstars of the summer to date, you would have in no particular order Cam Green, Scott Boland, George Bailey, selector extraordinaire, Pat Cummings, Usman Khawaja, Travis Head, and Josh Giddey, and I'm sure there's a couple I've missed. Well, you can add the names of Chief Justice James Allsop, Justice Anthony Bazanko, and Justice David O'Callaghan, for they have collectively saved the Australian Open. Without their decision last night, today would have been just another divisive day, talking about Djokovic again and again and again. Should he be playing? Will they or won't they boo him, etc., etc.? You could think about also throwing in the immigration minister, for despite the tenuous nature of his shallow argument, the strategy was right and the ends absolutely justified the means. For the very large majority of Australians all agreed, it was painfully obvious Djokovic had no right to be here, given the insult to the Australians who had suffered greatly, and of course, all of those tennis players who arrived vaccinated when they would have preferred not to do so. So it was the right decision after all. But on further consideration, Alex was not worthy of the list, for his hawk eye was blind to the obvious signs pre-Christmas that a calamity was about to visit us when the issue of medical exemption first arose. He finished strongly, Alex, but his first half was horrendous. So too were the state government, whose exemption got him through, and Tennis Australia, who were blind from the outset. But they are the biggest beneficiaries, Tennis Australia, of the result. For today's exciting win, by example, by the underdog Australian Alexander Vukic, would have been lost by a continuation of the Djokovic nightmare. How relieved would Tennis Australia be right now that he's gone? So now is not the time for looking at their board structure and governance. But clearly, after this debacle, things need to change. No, now is the time to celebrate those that are here, those that have already had big wins. And as I said last Monday, Tanasi Cocky Kokkinakis is one that could electrify the town. And since we talked about him last week, he's gone on to win his first title, beating Marin Cilic, a slam winner, in Adelaide for his first title. Yes, he plays Nadal in round two, and yes, Nadal won in straight sets today. But the cocky is a-coming, and Nadal has had COVID. Get him into a five-set slugfest, and cocky might just put in a cracker to wipe the memories of the last 2 weeks away, temporarily at least. Let's welcome back the Elf Brown medalist of 2021, but as a lot of people told me through my career scoop, you're only as good as your next season, in fact, your next game. Welcome to you.
Hello, Jared.
Good to have you back, Scoop.
Great to be back. It's good to see you. Good to hear from everyone. Cocky won a cracker. I like it. Your editorials have just gotten better since I've been gone, clearly. He'd want to just improve on his first set performance.
Poor start after we pumped him up.
You put the nice moz on him. He's up against Yannick Hanfmann, who's a German qualifier. He's down a break 4-2.
Just loosening up after a solid preparation in Adelaide.
Fair to say there's been a bit happening since I've been gone.
You've missed a bit.
Just a small amount.
I assume already that that Todd Woodbridge has paid you his bottle of red, and Peter Johnson has also paid up his bet.
But Jono doesn't want to pay, and when I went into the Nine Studios today looking for the bottle of Grange from Todd, it wasn't there, and it didn't sound like it was completely forthcoming. I mean, the bet as I saw it was, is Novak going to play or not?
Well, that's my understanding.
I mean, he actually got onto the court, but
it was a close thing, I've got to say.
He didn't end up playing.
No, in all seriousness, it's been a really sad couple of weeks.
That's exactly the word I was going to
use. Really disappointing that the country has had to deal with Novak the way it's ended up dealing with him. I feel for Novak.
So do I.
I also think Novak is the author of his own demise to a large degree. But, you know, he did get encouraged to get on the plane. So it's a very difficult situation.
There's a few different Lady Macbeths in this scenario, isn't there, Jared? I mean, it's not just on TA, although I think that they're quite culpable for it. You know, where have the state government been in explaining this the last couple of weeks, I think is an interesting question.
And the whole thing fell apart when they blinked. When they blinked on the no jab, no play, and came in with not just one committee to get them through, but two. I still don't quite know why we had to have two medical exemption committees, but it seemed part of the smokescreen. But nevertheless, it's time to move on, Scoop, at least temporarily.
Don't you think that the Feds sort of blinked on that as well, though?
Well, I mean, Scott Morrison just don't think they followed up because Hunt was, you know, he was as clear as you could be. It doesn't qualify to get you into the country.
Yeah, but
the immigration minister should have come over the top and made sure that it was in the system. So whatever visa application went through, even with a state government exemption, it had to be knocked on the head.
Yeah, I think the immigration minister, Alex Hawke, had a shocking few days, to be honest. Scott Morrison, the prime minister, said today that the case was about someone who sought to come to Australia and not comply with the entry rules at our border. Alex Hawke's reason to deport Novak Djokovic had nothing to do with border rules.
No, and that's why I said it was a tenuous argument. It was all about winning.
But how do you have a federal immigration minister say one thing on one day and the prime minister literally goes against it the day after, Jared? I mean, it's just been a calamity all round. And ultimately, I think the right decision has been made, to be honest. Novak shouldn't be playing. He's not playing. But
And this is where it should never have got there, because Tennis Australia were blinded to what an insult it was to Australians, particularly here in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And also, I think the acrimony that was coming out of the players' room about being forced to vaccinate and yet the special treatment for Novak was never going to wash.
And as we've seen today, despite the fact that we've had pretty low crowds for obvious reasons, the tennis took over, Jared.
Always does.
And storylines sprout from everywhere. Every year it happens.
Well, let's move on. Roger Rashid has been good enough to join us, as he always does. He's been great with his time, and hopefully he saw something that he liked today. Welcome again to you, Roger.
Welcome, boys, and good to have everyone back on board and just going hard, as I would expect.
Well, as as Scoop rightly said, you've seen it in football, you've seen it in tennis. Everything self-rejuvenates, and one player retires, another one comes along, and we may have one on court right now, and Kokkinakis. But in many ways, it was just great to have clear air for the Australian Open to get underway.
No, I 100% agree. I just think today has been a brand new day. Everybody started immediately when the decision was handed down to talk about the tennis and looking forward to day one. And I've already commentated two matches. I've got a 7 o'clock match to do as well. And around the grounds, there's just excitement. You can hear the roar of the fans. On the court three, there was some really great excitement with the young Australian getting through in four sets. And against Lloyd Harris in South Africa. So there's a whole lot of, I think it's just, you know, the reality is sports people and the fans, et cetera, it's just business as usual because the players are just lacing them up. They're going out and they're staying in their lane and they're doing their thing. And to just be able to focus on tennis, as you're quite rightly said, Jared, if it was still hanging and it had have gone the other way, I just think today wouldn't have been a great day and we would have just been dealing with it right throughout the course of the tournament.
Oh, absolutely. As much as Craig Tiley desperately wanted to get him here, I'm sure he desperately... Well, in fact, I think he should have been desperately wanting the decision to go the way he did, because otherwise
relief.
The whole tournament would have been just a debacle about this bloke.
Yeah, completely agree. Hey, Roger, as a coach, I'm fascinated by the Kokkinakis. I mean, Jared thinks he can go deep into the second week. We know his best is great. As a coach...
Got to get through the first round.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, he's serving to stay in the first set at the moment at 2-5 against Jannik Honfman. As a coach, how do you try to avoid the come-down factor that would be natural for a guy just winning his first ATP tournament and then coming into, you know, an opening round at a slam?
So, first of all, I think you've got to celebrate that win. If you had just said, OK, I've got to focus, I've got to get to Melbourne and on the flight, which you did, and then practice tomorrow, got to go out, got to enjoy the win. He obviously wouldn't have had a lot of time to do that, but it's something new, it's different. All of a sudden, the focus is back on him. So... you must let that just take its natural course. And then once you're here at the Australian Open, there's the beauty about the Australian Open is there's energy. So it's not like he's had to jump on a plane and go and play somewhere else where he might not have been on a show court. There might not have been a whole lot of energy in the air. So now there's the same energy. So, look, I wouldn't have spoken too much about it except to just try and engage in sort of some routines when we turned up on a Sunday. Relax, take it pretty easy, actually. Sunday would have been, for me, probably about a 30-minute hit before today. And maybe not even, you know, just to get a feel for the balls, the condition. He's been in Adelaide for 2 weeks. and then basically shut down and get ready to play today. But you know what? It's a different opponent, different environment, different expectations, and you know, he's dealing with a whole new world as he enters the Australian Open this year.
So even if he loses the first set, I mean, you're allowed to invest a set in getting your head right and getting yourself back. And I mean, ultimately, you've still got to win, but he's up against a qualifier. Couldn't have got a better draw, really, to get himself through that.
Jared, did you suffer from the come down factor? Like, is it a thing across all sports? If you had a really good day, you know, in the midfield, the next week, was it harder to get up? Or if you had a huge come from behind win as a team?
I think there's all of that. I mean, I think whether it's a team or a player, I mean,
it would be harder to deal with that personally, though, as a player, right?
Week in, week out is the most difficult element of sport. I mean, you reach a standard.
It's why the bet. It's why the best of the best, right? They can just turn up and they just hit the repeat. It's why the stars just, you know, we just, you know, we take it for granted. We take for granted for what Rafa does, what Ash Barty's doing at the moment, what, you know, what the greats of the game, when they hit the repeat button and turn up every day and their practice sessions are elite there. You know, it's just really high end. That is something enormously special. We take it. I think we take it for quite granted. So for Fanasi to go through all that, yes, he might drop the first set. He might come back and you know, hopefully he comes back and wins. If he doesn't happen to do that, because there's an opportunity. You remember the qualifier. He's played three matches to get here, so he feels really confident. Seeing the ball like a football, it's a moment for him.
Yep.
Understands. Kokkinakis has actually won a title. There might be a little bit of a letdown. There's also 2 weeks of tennis, so there could be a fraction of fatigue setting in. Who knows what that looks like? And so he walks on court and says, "Okay, I need to lock in and get a good start. If I get a good start, I'm in a not a bad position." And that looks like what he's done so far.
Kokkinakis has just lost the first set 6-2 against Honfman Jared.
Indeed, he has. So this next set is going to be all important, Roger. The one thing we've missed right throughout the discussion on Novak Djokovic is the court and the ball speed. I take it they're all good because no one's complained about it.
No, well, we haven't had airtime for it, Jared. It's actually taken away a lot of the airtime and the paper to be written on. But look, I think it's a very good all round court. It's just watching today, I did a Seb Korda match who's Peter Korda's son. I mean, what a family that family is. They got
golfer,
you know,
tennis
amazing.
Player.
But yeah, he's actually just the third wheel. He's just the he's the brothers sitting in the corner. We're the show, the two daughters. But you know, and he was able to serve volley. He was using his slice. He played quite a fast game to beat Cam Noe, the number 12 seed. So I think we're going to see a bit of everything, and the conditions will play a part. And if Fanasi gets through, for example, he's got to win now in 4 or 5 sets, and he has Rafa in front of him the next round. So it's not, again, you know, there's a physicality side of it. But yeah, look, the stadium looks fantastic. The new court, Kia Arena, is out unbelievable. That's where I commentated my first match, and that's going to be a great show court with a lot of atmosphere. And the fans, you know, they're all amped up. And hopefully we get as many fans as we can have as capacity throughout the course of the next fortnight.
Can you give us a smoky for both sides of the draw?
Yeah, I can, actually. Coco Gauff actually went down, which I thought was... I thought it had a chance to go deep into the tournament. She just lost, which is actually an interesting one. Madison Keys is one for mine. One Adelaide has been a top 10 player. Beautiful ball striker. Yes, she's going to have to get through potentially Barty or Osaka. So there's one for me on the women's side, and that's an outsider who's currently ranked about 60 in the world. And on the men's, who is your outsider there now that Novak? I don't know where it sits with the men's really. If I'm looking at a legitimate outsider, don't know. I think Sinner. Maybe an Italian Italian player who's a really good competitor will really enjoy these courts. He's got a fair bit in front of him, but I just think again he's got a potential draw that allows him to get pretty deep.
What about someone like Sebastian Korda?
I did his match. I think he can go. He can get into
second week.
You know, he can get into this. You know, into the deep. He can get to the third, fourth round. He was at the fourth round at the French Open. This is his first Australian Open. He's a junior Australian Open champion.
Yeah.
He was a fourth round at the French also, and he went to the fourth round at Wimbledon. So last year, he's got great composure, and I do feel like he can go deep. Can he win it at this age? And does he have the tools yet? No, I don't think so. I think it's more someone that's actually a little bit more established in that top 10 range.
Thank you, as always, Roger.
Thanks, boys. And Jared, great start off the top. Really enjoyed it.
Well, I was just about to say to you, Roger, I thought your first game was good, but you've got a few more levels to get. But it's only early in the tournament.
Yeah, and you know, as you know, if you're playing your best tennis early, it's a little scary.
Okay? Goodbye.
See ya.
Roger Rashid there. More on sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have Roger Rashid on. It's going to be even better to have Monty Panesar on. Not sure the former English cricket great is going to be very happy at the moment.
Well, let's see if we can put a positive spin on it. Before we do that, though, unfortunately, Cocky can't quite get the cracker right now. He's down 1-0 in the second set.
Lost the first set 6-2. Time for news headlines. It's Tony Tardio.
Good evening. Humanitarian groups in Australia and New Zealand are providing aid to Tonga following the destructive volcanic eruption at the weekend. The extent of damage to the Pacific Island nation remains unclear, with phone and internet lines severely limited. Tonga's cabinet is meeting to decide what help is more urgently needed. The first batch of rapid antigen tests will be distributed to key workplaces around Victoria this week. Hospitals, community groups and multicultural associations are among the first contingent to receive the tests. Schools will then follow. Victoria has recorded 22,429 new cases in the past 24 hours, along with six deaths. An 11-year-old boy has been flown to the Children's Hospital in a critical condition after falling from a horse at Aries Inlet today. Two girls have suffered minor injuries. And Labor is demanding the Prime Minister take responsibility for the visa storm surrounding the world number one men's tennis player Novak Djokovic. More news at 7.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Sam McClure and Jared Healy with you. About to be joined by a man who might be feeling a little down in the dumps at the moment. Jared, if you're of the English persuasion, whether you're living in Australia or back in England, it hasn't been the best.
Oh, it's been a horrendous summer for them, let's be honest, Scoob, even though it's their winter over there. But there is only one positive to come out of this. It can't get any worse than this.
No.
It can only go up.
And Monty Panesar is not a man that backs away. He fronts up no matter what the conditions are, and he's done so again. Monty, welcome to you. What would be the best word to describe how you and your compatriots are feeling right now?
Well, good morning to you. Thank you for having me on the show. I think when the Australians start feeling sorry for you, then you know you've had a complete shocker.
How's it being assessed over there in your good homeland? How's Fleet Street handled it?
Yeah, I think we're just a little bit. I think we genuinely had a chance at the start of the Ashes, but you know we didn't pick the right team. You know, for the right venues was one issue. The other one was probably the preparation, you know, going into, coming into the Ashes, and then just general sort of, I think question marks, you know, what's highlighted also is slightly deeper problems with just the structure of the game, and then how, in Australia you have state cricket, but they are more aligned to producing Test cricketers, while in county cricket, with you know the coaches or the teams look to just you know win games in 2.5-3 days, and it's not. It doesn't replicate, you know, what they face in Australia. They're not trained for that. And then, obviously, you know, the England team got, you know, exposed.
Yes, we've had a chat to a number of people from England about this, and it was some interest to me that somebody suggested that players come over and get some experience in Shield cricket. That, to me, makes absolute sense from an English perspective. I'm not sure how accommodating the Australian cricket administration would be on that, but
we'd love that, wouldn't we, Jared?
Look, I can't see anything wrong with it. Yeah. We welcome them to the BBL, so I'm not sure why.
Just graphy.
Particularly players who are still in their apprenticeship, Monty. It just makes common sense to us because we've always gone over to the UK to get involved in county cricket.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, and I think that's what you know. All the sort of you know nations do help each other out to promote the game and make Test cricket as strong as it can be, and I think that's a great idea because it will probably allow you know English cricket where it's a little bit you know for Test cricket to survive. I think England needs to be you know strong Test side, And Australia being so strong at the moment, I think it'd be a sort of a sense of duty just to sort of think, okay, you know, let's help England out to make it stronger. So then when we have, you know, the next Ashes, you know, series in England, it's a bit more competitive, and, you know, the survival of Test cricket will help that, you know, towards that cause. But then obviously you don't want to go the other way where then, you know, Australia, England start winning because of the fact that they were allowed to play state cricket. So there's obviously, you know, that pros and cons to it. But generally speaking, you know, then you look at in South Africa, look how some of their batsmen, similar conditions, they were, you know, toughing it out. So other places are doing it. It's just, you know, in England, you know, we need to find a way of doing it where maybe just the fact that, you know, they haven't been exposed to this level of bowling. It's been absolutely brutal and magnificent. You know, the Australian bowling attack has been unbelievably strong.
Monty, you would probably not have heard of this character, although he was larger than life over here in Australia for a long, long time. So I'm just not quite sure he got to the UK. But there was a bloke called E.J. Whitten, Teddy Whitten, who was the leader of one of our state teams for a long, long time. And he was one of the great celebrators, one of the great promoters. But he was savage on a loss. And after a loss, after a few beers, he brought out the stamp, albeit a rhetorical stamp. And he stamped players never to play again. And so in the bar, he after a loss, he would probably stamp three or four, just never to be selected ever again, just not up to it. So if EJ passed on that stamp to you, who would you stamp never to two again?
You put me in a tough situation now. Look, I think, you know, because there's some young players in that team who've probably been exposed, you know, where they haven't faced this level of bowling. And you don't want to sort of, you know, completely, you know, cancel them out. But if we look at some of the... Who could I stamp? Because I've got to answer your question, right? You've given me.
What about your
that
openers?
Question.
Your openers struggled big time.
Openers. Couple of, you know, both Rory and Haseem, you know, they both kind of struggled. You know, Zach Cooley was a bit of a positive.
He was
Mark
all right.
Wood was another positive. Why don't we go the other way? Who I won't stamp out? You know, who's been the shining light of the England team?
Does Joe Root stay your captain, Monty?
I would like to see Joe Root to stay captain. I think he can turn things around. There may be a change in management position, maybe, you know, like
new
in the one day, as we've seen, bring in, you know, someone else, maybe from the county cricket to manage the West Indies tour. But people are saying when Justin Langer's, you know, contract runs out in June, they're thinking that he could be the front runner just when Everton's manager's been sacked. Yesterday, Justin Langer may not get a renewed contract from Cricket Australia. He could be, he's apparently a front runner to become the next England coach in June, July.
I think Steve Waugh put an end to that yesterday. He basically anointed, he had the reverse stamp. He said not to be sacked. So I suspect it would be almost impossible to sack Justin Langer, albeit he was in a bit of trouble, I've got to say, down the track. But that may be a start. You do need to rebuild. I must admit, from an amateur's observation, I like the energy and the aggressive display early in the piece from your new keeper, Billings.
Yeah, he's obviously, you know, he's a natural leader, and I'm sure they'll give him a few more test matches, just not, you know, with... Just Butler recovering from, you know, got seen a specialist back home here in England. And then, you know, there's this between either Ben Stokes or himself, seeing who's a better outcome. But maybe, give Sam Billings a bit more of a go on the behind the stumps. That could be a good option. It's just been, I think just no one expected Australia to be this strong. You know, no one thought that Australia would be as strong as they've been. So they've obviously got some things right. And, it's just been, you know, I thought England were quite generous that they played two pink test matches. You know, I think that's what, you know, normally you would only play one, but that was, you know, good on England to do that. But conditions, again, you know, just favour them. And once they sniffed a couple of wickets, it was just constant collapses every test match. You know, Brisbane, I think, you know, we had like 10 for 80, Adelaide was 8 for 70, and then Melbourne was, you know, again, you know, 8 for 70, and this one was the worst out of the lot since 1948. So it's just been, you know, it's probably the worst batting performance over the last 100 years. And how do the Australians fan feel? Do they think that it's just in what they expected them, not Australia, to be so dominant?
Well, I've got to say, Scoop and I thought the betting at the start of the
England
thing was a little bit short, but we were proved 100%
a little
incorrect.
Bit short. Jeez, we've never been more wrong about anything, I reckon, between the pair of us.
Just moving on, Monty. I'm not sure if you follow the tennis, but you wouldn't have picked up a small issue we've had with Novak Djokovic by any chance. And how are we being treated over there?
Well, yeah, I wrote an article about it here, and I thought it was firstly just a mistake, you know, by the Australian authorities. It kind of gave a platform for, like I said before, some of the anti-vaxxers, you know, who believe that, you know, you don't need to take two vaccinations, just to talk about it. And it's, I think in the long term, it's probably the right thing to do. Djokovic, you know, didn't play in the Australian Open because obviously he was surrounded by, you know, when he was even COVID positive, you know, the following day, supposed to have a 2 meter distance, taking a picture with, you know, a group of people. So I think in the longer term, it was probably the right decision, especially with Australian strict laws that they have. So let's be honest, you know, Melbourne being the city with the longest lockdown ever, there would have been huge outcry by the public, you know, who've been, you know, over 250 days, you know, just in lockdown, and it's been, you know, harsh conditions for some of the people in Melbourne. So, you know, it's probably looking in the long term picture, you know, it would have been, I think, safer that Djokovic, you know, didn't play in the tournament. So, just to sort of, you know, give a fair reflection to the public, or there would have been huge, you know, scrutiny on the laws that the Australian, you know, government placed on the people in Australia.
And whilst you're giving us your political assessment, will Boris be there by Easter, or will you be looking for someone else and you'll be putting your hand up?
Well, he seems to keep going to a party after every press briefing, he's constantly, David. Apparently, he's saying that, the garden wasn't part of the office. Is part of the office. The garden is part of the office, so you're allowed to have a party just outside number 10. And, it's 50-50 at the moment, you know. Hopefully, we don't know if there's any front runner either, you know. We've had the Labour Party, he's been having sort of a few sort of parties as well.
Party time everywhere in England except in the dressing room for the cricketers. Great to have you on, you Monty, and great to have you on the show.
Thanks,
and,
Monty.
Appreciate your contribution right throughout the series.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
Monty Panesar and the Cocky, he's in trouble. Scoop.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day. I think it was the Bloodhound himself, Mitch Cleary, our man, winning Hound Awards, that first reported today that umpires will be less lenient to players who have had prior opportunity.
And less? How could you be less?
I don't know.
How could you be any more nasty and frugal than they are now?
So, Jared, you and I disagree on a fair few things in footy. We agree on, I think, most big things, and that is that prior opportunity right now is at a dangerous point, and apparently Brad Scott and the AFL are going to lessen it.
Gil's got to, Brad.
Well,
Gil's a no prior opportunity, man.
I was about to say Clark.
And Gil and Brad was, from my understanding, my discussions with Brad, he was a defender of the faith.
So you're saying that the CEO,
I reckon, Gil's
got
to him over Christmas. Right. He's gone, hey, now listen, we've got to tidy this up. It just makes it more confusing. The tighter it is, the difference between what is and what isn't is so confusing.
I mean, I think
it's dangerous. And the principle, the core principle that's in Gil's charter, you look after the bloke going for the ball, must be rubbed out.
I think you enunciated it well last year. It might have even been the year before, Jared, that you said that, you know, the definition of prior opportunity is just not right. That people see it as you pick up the ball and then you look up.
Yeah.
And apparently that's prior.
It's ridiculous.
You've got to have at least half a second to assess your options. It can't just be prior opportunity
why pick
because
the
you've
ball
taken
up.
Possession.
If you don't get that, why pick the ball up?
Completely agree.
We already saw blokes last year and the year before sweating on players, letting them pick the ball up
and tackling them.
And then tackle them.
Yep. And then people think that if they get tackled straight away and they drop it, that's holding the ball. It's not holding the ball. You've got to actually have prior opportunity for it to be incorrect disposal. This is people, I don't think it's quite understood as well as it should be. So the official mandate from the AFL is out. In 2022, a free kick will be awarded against a player who ducks their head prior to being legally tackled and does not immediately correctly dispose of the ball.
Has that changed? How has that changed?
Well, I always thought this was part of the game. Umpire's cues for prior opportunity includes evading, fending, ducking, has a prior option, i.e. goes to handball / kick and decides not to, is balanced and steady, is awarded a mark or free kick or drives their head. Again, I mean, balanced and steady is something that I reckon I remember Wayne Campbell talking about years and years ago when he was umpire's boss. I mean, how do you define balanced and steady? I'm with you for what it's worth, Jared. I think lessening prior opportunity ultimately makes it more confusing for the umpires and we're going to have more bad decisions.
I don't see that law being any different to last year, though.
No. Well, I mean, that, and I haven't got the last year's to compare it to, unfortunately, but that was a sub-point of the main point that Mitch reported today, that umpires will be less lenient towards players who've had prior opportunity and do not immediately dispose of the ball correctly when they are legally tackled.
My view is that they've got one thing wrong with prior opportunity, or had one thing wrong.
Team prior? Or?
No. When you get rotated. I mean, you get rotated.
Yeah, apparently in this new mandate, the players won't be allowed to do 360 degrees.
Okay. Well, that would be fair enough to tighten that up.
It's also an easy thing to umpire.
Yeah.
Because you can actually have a cue.
You can tighten that up, but you just can't make minimal seconds or, you know, the tightest of prior opportunities any tighter. Otherwise, you go to no prior opportunity.
Yep. I think it's dangerous. I think it's got the potential to make the game worse, to be honest. And I'm not trying to be too dramatic with that, but once I see a tightening of prior opportunity, Jared, every man and his dog wants to have an opinion on what prior opportunity is, and if it's going to be lessened, you're going to have blokes picking up the ball, tackled straight away, and sorry, holding the ball, move on. Alistair Clarkson called for that a couple of years ago, and we held off.
The more I look at the game, and particularly watching a couple of women's games over the weekend, the more I believe a rule we should bring in is you can't pick the ball up if you're on your knees. You have to be on your feet. Because you go to ground, you pick the ball up, somebody jumps on you, you get a pack.
I don't hate that rule.
It's dangerous. People jump sliding in to pick the ball up. They're not sliding in to win it and then distribute it. They're sliding in to kill the contest.
Yep. And Jared, just before we go to the break, we'll come back and talk a little bit of some of the upsets in tennis. Rest in peace, the great Scott Palmer, age of 84.
Keep punching.
Passed away over the weekend. I reckon you say keep punching to me, Jared, basically every time we end a phone conversation.
That's right.
And, you know, Scotty Palmer introduced that. He was a legend, wasn't he, as part of the sports journalism in this country?
Yeah, indeed he was. He was very entertaining. I was probably.
Did you have much to do with him?
Oh, a little bit, not much. I didn't work under him at any stage or with him, but I was always a great admirer. I think at Channel 7 when they introduced him on the Saturday night replay and Sandy Roberts would cross to him every night. It was one of the most looked forward to TV segments in the history of the sport, and he always used to finish it with the now famous, "Keep punching, Sandy." But he'd always have something. He was a man of his era. He was an iconic newsman, and that's what he was. He used to break a lot of stories, and he told them in a very, very entertaining way.
Rest in peace, Scott Palmer. More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Just coming up towards the 7 o'clock news, Coco Gauff beaten today. So the 17-year-old, Jared, who we've all been lauding, and quite correctly, we thought that she was a decent chance, or certainly I did, of going into the second week. Chang Wang of China beat her today. I don't know if you remember, Jared, a couple of years ago, Chang Wang beat
Cassie's coaching
Serena.
Her, and she's my smoky.
She's your smoky,
I had a bit of information on Chang Wang today. And
did ya?
Cassie's been
No cashy, Robbo.
Cashy is there. And so the cash was on. Cashy's there, doing a great job coaching her. Haven't heard from. In fact, the one thing that was interesting was we didn't hear from many of the former players on this whole
Novak
debate. Grothy had a couple of cracks.
A couple?
From off the one of the longer runs.
I think Novak's actually still picking himself up off the tarmac from Grothy's second drive-by.
But it was amazing how few people
columns in the Herald Sun
had any impact or any say whatsoever. I know it's their AFL, if you like. But
Osaka's press conference today was so good.
If it had been an issue like that in AFL, I mean, everybody in AFL has an opinion.
Yeah.
And whilst you're on my favourite topic, prior opportunity, the thing that really pees me off as much as anything with prior opportunity.
Tell me, Jared.
Somebody wins the ball, they look up straight away, their head's down, they look up, and all of a sudden, a 105-kilo person is about to give a savage bear hug.
Oh, no, Jared, you've had prior.
And they stick their hand out so they're not slaughtered and off to hospital straight away so they can actually get a breath of fresh air and push off to try and get prior opportunity. Hayden Kennedy tells me, oh, no, we don't pay that one. By God, you do, Hayden.
Yeah, they do.
Now, I know you're not in charge anymore, so you can whoever it is in charge, I don't even know who's in charge anymore.
When you're lessening prior opportunity, though, those are only going to be paid more. The game's going to be interesting.
Why would you pick the ball up in a crush? There's no point. You can't. Yeah. I mean, they're only blokes pushing away to get themselves a prior opportunity.
Can we get Brad Scott on this week?
Oh, hopefully. He's a tennis man as well, I think. No, he's a golf man, not a tennis man.
Zoe, can we get Brad on, please? We need to discuss
prior opportunity. But the major issue is...
Open up the second hour as well. Jared might go for 2 hours.
Three quarters of prior opportunity stuff-ups come with blokes receiving a handball.
Yep.
So if you took away all the prior opportunity, if you receive the ball, you haven't won it, you don't deserve a prior opportunity. So if you receive the ball, it's as simple as that, you have no prior opportunity. And you gave the bloke who won it a little bit more opportunity.
Team prior.
It just solves 75% of the problem, but it doesn't put the main issue of the game in is that you should protect the ball winner.
Naomi Osaka today asked, do you think Novak Djokovic should be playing? She said, is my opinion going to change anything?
No, it's a good answer.
Reporter
and
said,
I'm not dropping off the cocky. I reckon he'll get up in 5.
He's 5-3 down in the second, lost the first 6-2. I'll get on with you.
Okay.
Cocky in 5. We'll see you tomorrow, folks. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for the great people at Red Energy as well as Wilson Homes. Jared Healy and Sam McClure with you for the next hour. Thanks for tuning in. We've got a lot coming up. Peter Johnson. Gee, Peter Johnson's coming up. I wonder if Jono's going to pay his bet. We've also got Ryan Harris, former Aussie, a fast bowling great as well. He's going to talk us through the 4-0 drubbing that was Australia versus England.
It was
almost unwatchable cricket by the end of it.
Well, you found it unwatchable. I
actually hated watching it,
did
to
you?
Be honest. And I know I'm a minority there.
I enjoyed Cameron Green, I've got to say.
Oh, yeah, that was great. And Scotty Bowler.
I mean, the boy's got some issues. He's got to get his head around, and in a literal fashion, around the short ball as a batsman. But, gee, imagine if he'd be the number one bowler in England, and he's about our fifth best. Mm.
I enjoyed the use of getting your head around, literally.
Thank you.
haven't heard that in a
while. What about the whack that who was number 3 for England yesterday?
Joe Root.
No, number 3 was number 4. It was Masood or
Milan.
Hamid, is it?
Hamid, yeah. Milan and Hamid. Yeah.
Milan, it might have been. Who came in and got smashed in the side of the head.
Yeah.
My goodness. If he hadn't have had a helmet on, I reckon he's dead.
Well,
because it was hitting temple-esque areas.
Yeah, well, we know that there's been so much work going to the helmet in the last decade. So, it's great that the equipment is as strong as it is.
So what else has happened today beside the Australian Open scoop?
Well, I mean, let's start there, can we? Because it was a huge day at the Australian Open, despite the fact that not many people are there. And, that's something that we can discuss.
Well, there's one in particular, wasn't there?
Has there been? I tell you what, Jared, I know we spoke about this in the first hour. It's been great listening to the show on my time off and just seeing it all unfold.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, not to beat our own chest here, but we were talking about this in October. We were saying that he's going to have issues getting in. And then Tennis Australia were always so confident. And you and I were sitting there going, do they know something we don't? Clearly they did.
Of course they did.
Clearly they were behind
the scenes. When Todd Woodbridge we're going to replay that at some stage.
Yeah, and by the way, just to put it on the record, I've got no issue with Craig Tiley and Tennis Australia behind the scenes trying to get him in. No issue with it. Okay, fair enough. My issue is it didn't work. You don't go that hard at something unless you know that you can get it done.
In this environment, you couldn't possibly do that.
I think clearly, Jared, what this showed is, and I'm not sure this has been discussed as much as it potentially should have been, I think what it showed is that they weren't negotiating with the right people. They clearly weren't talking to the feds enough.
Well, clearly they weren't doing the feds. In fact, they were ignoring what the feds had to say.
Well, the feds embarrassed themselves in their own way, and you quite rightly touched on that in your opener. I mean, there's a few different versions of Lady Macbeth in this whole saga. Let's be honest. There's a lot of people that have stuffed this up. The federal government chopped and changed what they wanted to do. Daniel Andrews has done one of the great disappearing acts in the last few weeks.
When I hear him say it's got nothing to do with the state government, ridiculous. I'm going to spew up.
And Tennis Australia, and we know that Craig Tiley prides himself on his relationship with players. You know, this has backfired spectacularly on him and Tennis Australia.
But that's because, you know why it's backfired? Because it was the wrong decision. It was a poorly...
I agree with that, but I think that's probably a separate issue, isn't it?
No, it's not the separate. You said you don't mind. You can understand it. No, I can understand him doing everything he can to get him here.
No, that's what he did.
Within the boundaries of what's reasonable.
Well, and to me, boundaries of what reasonable have changed.
No. When you tell every other player, and in the locker room, they were pretty savage. Obviously.
Yeah, I was listening to the show last week.
Every other player played under the same set of circumstances and understanding, as all Victorians did. No jab, no play. Mm. No jab, no play. No jab, no play is the contract that Tennis Australia and the state government had with the Victorian public, let alone the Australian public.
Yep.
And to then orchestrate or try to orchestrate a side door, which was at best tenuous, was clearly wrong.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean,
tell me why we had two panels. Why did we have a second panel? No one can tell me a valid reason outside of just smoke screens and window dressing.
Well, Jared, as I think you and I discussed off-air last week when I was in the car, you always know when something strange is going on, when people give you more information than they need to. As soon as I heard about the second panel...
Yeah, it just made no sense.
I thought, hang on, why wouldn't one panel be enough?
That's right.
Why did we need the second panel? Because clearly they were trying to get something through the cracks.
Well, it just sounded better, didn't it?
Yeah, well, it sounded weird to me.
Well, it sounded weird from
the
word
go. I mean, my spidey senses started going off their head as soon as I heard the second panel.
And the flagrant abuse of the exemption rule of being vaccinated or not being vaccinated
was ridiculous. Was absolutely ridiculous, and it was embarrassing in the end.
Yeah.
And I thought it was embarrassing we put him in detention, but
there's probably been so much issue. But this is what the argument we had with Todd Woodbridge before Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
Todd, you are going to create an embarrassment for us all here.
Well, I don't think TA created it. I think they helped to propagate it.
Well, the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if he doesn't turn up, if TA had have been...
Novak just shouldn't have come.
Well, who convinced him to come?
Yeah, I know. As Justin Quill said on this show last week, and I know that I agree with you, what you were saying to him was that Once he got told to get out, he shouldn't have gone to court and should have just left. But I get what Justin was saying, and you're the athlete here, Jared. I'm just the journo. Professional athletes that are destined and driven by success are wired differently, I assume. And he would have been sitting there going, that's what you can control. I want to do everything I can to play.
Well, my understanding is elite athletes make good calls. And I would have thought if the federal government went to this length, they had so much to lose. They were 99% confident.
Not going to turn it around.
Despite the tenuous nature of the argument,
that's why I thought they
were going to get it up.
I know, but that's why I thought the courts might turn it around.
But they couldn't. They had no choice of turning it around.
Mm. Mm.
And their lawyers should have told them so.
Just a couple of things to knock off from the Australian Open as well before we get to a break. So Naomi Osaka won pretty easily over Camila Osorio, who's the Colombian making her debut. Osaka looks, I mean, she's on a warpath to Ash, isn't she? Ash Barty in the fourth round. She's the one to beat, Naomi. She's in some form, judging by today. And Rafa Nadal made very light work of the American Marcos Giron, 6-1, 6-4, 6-2. Emma Raducanu to take on Sloane Stephens in her Australian Open debut, which is next, I think it's tomorrow. And you know, we know that there's just so many good matches coming up. I just want to show you this. or play you this. John McEnroe and his Novak rant on ESPN. I'm not sure if you've heard this, Jared. Take a listen.
But what's gone on the last 12 days tops everything. That is total and utter chaos. Absolute joke what's gone on the last 12 days. It's sad the way it ended. If he decides not to have a vaccine and the Australian authorities say to him, you cannot go down there unless you're vaccinated, end of story, it's black or white. He decides whether or not he wants to do it. He's got very strong beliefs. He's entitled to those beliefs. The guy's won it 9 times. I mean, I tell you, it was gutsy in a way. I got to hand it to him in a way because I had 7 majors. He's got 20. The reason he's got a lot more than me, that he was willing to go risk that.
So it sounds like that Max there pointing the finger at the feds, really, that they should have legislated. If you're not vaxxed, you're not coming.
Yeah, it's easy from the other side of the country to point the finger at those who are in the limelight. And because the federal government took him to court, they are the ones who are copping the heat.
Yep.
But at the same time, they, I think, needed to do that. And they were put in that position by two other parties.
We're going to continue this.
I mean, you can't tell me that Greg Hunt could have been any more clear about this. The issue is
just legislated, though.
The immigration minister should have been on top of it and said, hey, don't even think he's coming, and put a red flag on him.
Yeah, I'm not sure the immigration minister's covered himself in glory in the last.
That's why I didn't make the list.
Few days. We're going to continue this discussion with our resident tennis expert, Peter Johnson, who's next on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. You're here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. You can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson home. It was the summer of tennis that kicked off today at Melbourne Park. Not as many there as you would like. But
how many were there at the start, do you reckon, Scoop?
Not many.
What, 10, 5, 20?
Were you talking about inside the entire precinct or just
yeah,
one
inside
over?
Inside the entire precinct.
10?
10,000.
Maybe.
What's it hold? It's about 120, is it?
Well, I reckon if you go back through the record books, TA would tell you that day and night session combined for day one would be over 100,000.
Yep.
But, Jared, as you were one of the first people 3 years ago to point this out with the footy, once crowds start hearing about less capacity,
yep,
it turns them off. So you yell 50% at someone, Jared, all the people that were sitting on the fence go, yep, oh, no, too hard, because I won't get in or I won't sit with my mates. So 50% very quickly turns into 30%. That's just my view.
Well, when I saw Alexander Vukic...
Gee, wasn't that a match?
That crowd there seemed pretty solid. In fact, I was wondering.
Court 3, yeah, it was packed. That's
I was wondering
true.
Why there wasn't a little bit more social distancing. It doesn't quite make sense that you have a 50% capacity, but you cram everybody into one, and the mask rule is a nonsense because most people have it down under their nose.
Yeah, I got told off for not wearing a mask today. Outside,
yeah,
walking in between studios. I think I have to check with Tennis Australia. I think the rule actually was, Jared, 50% capacity of the matches that hadn't been sold.
Right.
So,
okay,
they might have let more than 50% into court 3 because it was too late to refund people's tickets.
Okay.
But I have to check
so
that.
So it's all right to get it in the first round, but no good to get it in the second. Let's move on because we've got a very serious issue to address with Peter Johnson. This has been going for...
Have you paid me my bet yet?
Probably about 7 weeks since the day that you said and challenged Jono that
never gonna
the
play.
Serbian wouldn't be playing.
He's never going to play.
The question is... Will Jono fess up,
yeah, good
point, and will Todd Woodbridge come to the party with the bottle of wine that you had on it? Welcome to you, Jono. Happy All-Australian, what do we call it, Australian Open Day.
Jared, hey Sam, good to talk to you both.
I've never seen a bloke lose a bet so with such a small margin. We are talking in nose hair. We're talking in nostril hair.
Does it matter what the margin is?
Not really.
Right.
No, not at all.
Just checking.
Just makes it all. It's the old John Elliott. What's better than being... Collingwood by 15 goals, beating them by one point.
I want to get the judge's verdict on what it is to, in terms of actually Melbourne in actually competing, because he actually got in the draw. He came to Melbourne, hit on Rod Laver Arena, picks up lucky loser prize money for not playing. Gee, it's close, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's close, Jono. You were very close. No question about close, but unfortunately...
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. Unfortunately,
Collingwood got pretty close to a few more premierships as well. That they just lost grand finals. I don't think they can.
Let's get stuck into it, though, Jono. Things need to change at Tennis Australia, surely, after what's been a debacle.
Jeez.
Gee, Jared, that's a... look, it's been obviously just such a heavy 2 weeks, something like I've never seen before. Or and look, I think the what is amazing now, and I'm just being around here today, it sort of has, people have moved on a little bit, I think. It's sort of like the play has begun. You mentioned before, you know, about the crowd numbers and the vibe around here. I'm on site at the moment, and I'd say there's about 10,000 people outside. But the match courts are pretty lean, but the court three, which you can get on, and Tokonakis will be playing shortly, but that's pretty full. But I think there's so many stories emerging that, you know, I think we can put it behind us and
well, we can temporarily, and that's what I said at the start. But you know, I had a look at the board structure today, Jono. Jane Herdlicker is the chairman. She's the CEO of Virgin. I'm trying to keep their flights in the air, and there's two other people who work for the same company as Jane Herdlicker, also on the board. Now, that to me doesn't make sense. From a balance perspective, from a opinions coming from all sorts of areas, I don't think you should have people who are under a CEO on a board. It doesn't make any sense to me in another life.
Well, I'm not sure of all the... You know, look, what I think I have always felt with the Tennis Australia board is it needed a stronger... sort of real tennis international flavour. I get we're a big corporation.
But there's nobody, you know, there's one person there with international tennis experience. No,
well, I guess that's what I'm agreeing with you, Jared. I do think that's an important ingredient. When you're functioning in a global sphere, and let's face it, the major revenue source is reliant on your understanding and your relationship with the international tour, with internationals. It's imperative that there's a huge amount of tennis knowledge on that board, and I also think at the same with the player development side, I think it just helps some of the decision making if it has a particular skill set that's really strong on the tennis. I get that you need every other component, but I think when I look at the board on face value, that's for me the missing piece.
Jono, we will move on and address these issues with you very secretly and privately, and then ambush you again as the weeks go on.
Perfect.
You like that strategy?
I like it, yeah.
But can we ask you about today's surprise winner, Alexander Vukic? You actually told me, I think a week ago, don't be surprised if he wins a couple of games.
Got some weapons.
We don't know him because he went through the American college system, but got some game.
He has, and that was a big win today. Lloyd Harris he beat, who's a really tall South African guy who was seeded, and now plays Rado Albot from Moldova. And look, he's a gritty competitor, but it's certainly pretty open for him. And look, that was what I really have enjoyed today, is that match with him on court three. Like, you heard the, you know, a bit of the Aussie, 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 and the crowd actually erupted at the end. And you know, I think there's been flickers of that with, it's a fairly sparse crowd, but you can just feel the shoots there, and that was almost the highlight of the day for me so far.
It was definitely the highlight of the day. I mean, you know, with everything going on, and obviously the Novak situation 24 hours earlier, and we're all waiting to see Thanasi Kokkinakis, but geez, he's got some power, young Vukic, Jared. And Sydney sider, you know, as you said, he's come through the college system, so we don't know heaps about him. Like, the guy he beat, he's a very good player.
Yeah, I was disappointed in the guy he beat. I thought he lacked a little bit when the game was there to be won.
He looked down on energy for me.
He did?
Just couldn't get to that.
Well, you don't know who's had COVID, do you?
No, you don't. And you don't know.
And this is the beauty. I reckon there's a few Aussies that can really do some damage, and especially, you know, I look at Dimina's draw in the bottom half. I think it's very open. You know, there's a... Well, look, you know, you've got Popper going around too. There's a few Aussies that... They're not going to just be happy to win a match. They're going to be trying to go pretty deep this year.
Jono, sounds like a dumb question on the face value of it, but the expectations on Barty going into this tournament, you know, is it like, is winning at her only pass mark? She actually comes up against what I think is a pretty tough opponent in the first round. Lucia Cherenko, Jared, can really play. I think last time they played at the Australian Open, she won the first set. Ash had to come from a set down. And we know, you know, winning your home slam is hard enough. Jono, how are you viewing her tournament going in?
Jono has put, can I just preface his answer by saying, my understanding from one of the major bookmakers around town is that Jono has sold his house and put the whole lot on Ash Barty. Sorry, Jono, to interrupt.
No, look, another one I've taken to the bank here. You know, I'm 0 for 1. So, but look, no, I think, and Sam, look, she, for me, is coming in far and away ahead of the others. And where she is from where she was 12 months ago, she's had an outstanding year, won five tournaments, won Wimbledon, you know, massive, what a massive sort of, not monkey off her back at all, but to win her second slam and win Wimbledon, and then, you know, and then the months she's had off at the end have only freshened her up, and she's played one time since she's been back here in the home ground conditions and won the tournament. And I think the other girls just aren't stringing it together like her, and I think the conditions, I think she's going to embrace them. I'm not just saying it as an Australian. I just see her just on form and game as being a fair way ahead of the rest of the field.
Well, what have we got tonight, Jono? What have we got to look forward to tonight?
Yeah, so Milman's playing. He's on Margaret Court Place.
Feliciano, what a great name, yeah, Feliciano.
And he's been playing a lot of years. I don't know. I think he's played about 70 slams in a row. Gee. He's tournament director in Madrid, so he's doing double time. And Ayla Tomljanović plays Paula Badoza from Spain, who won last week in Sydney, won Indian Wells last year. So that is a really tough matchup. Big night. And tomorrow's schedule, there's some cracker matches tomorrow. I got to say, you know, you'll see a lot of Aussies playing. Dimonor will be playing. Musetti, you've got...
who's the best player in Australia right now, Jono? And I want to preface this by saying that if Kokkinakis can get to the second week, it could well be the best thing that has ever happened to Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah, look, I think at the moment when you look on rankings, you know, so Kokkinakis has got he's got a bullet beside him. He's going up fast. You've got Dimonor played probably the best I saw him play in the last 12 months in the ATP Cup and just relishing this atmosphere and, as I say, a pretty good draw. Then you've got Popper, who, and these guys that are going to, and look, Duckworth went down today. He lost in five to Manorino. There's just a few that are, as I say, they're going deep and playing well, which almost makes Nick, you know, back in the pack a little bit. And I think, you know, we all love him as a player, but gee, what a poor preparation. Not all his fault because he's had COVID, but he's really plays tomorrow night after really, you know, doing a week in ISO, so that's not too pretty for him.
But do you think if Cocky, let's say he went on and got the semifinals, do you think it may supercharge the competitiveness Kyrgios Scoop? You don't think so?
No.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think they've come through together and Kyrgios has been the man for a long time.
I think if the competitive spirit was going to be charged, Jared, it would have been charged.
Oh, you never know. Remember when
Tomic... Go by evidence.
Yeah, but Tomic actually challenged him the other day and he snapped back.
Tomic still thinks he can win a slam.
I realise that. All right.
Tomic's leaning on another player.
I just got a feeling it could be the best thing that's happened to him.
I'm
getting focused, Jono.
Yeah, I'm a bit in your camp on that, Jared, because I think when you're mates, when you're really close mates, you know, there's an element that you're, and this is the tough thing on tennis, you've got to play your mate so often and you're in the same field as them. You know, you're happy for him, but gee, it makes you want to go a bit better.
Which is how disappointing that would be if it's going to take one of his mates being better than him to charge his Grand Slam.
Doesn't matter how it gets there, as long as he gets
there. How disappointing that would be. Jono, great to have you on. 79 straight Grand Slam performances, Feliciano Lopez, by the way. He's also got the record for the most losses on the ATP Tour. But when you're playing every year, sometimes that happens.
Thanks, good stats.
Peter Johnson there, our resident tennis expert, the only man
to take it to the ATM. He's lost the bank status.
Really?
Yeah, no, you can't take it to the bank, John.
Big bet. The big bet on the woman trying to go for a home slam for the first time.
Yeah, well, that's he's a big bet. Had a good crack there.
Don't know if she wins it, Ash. Don't know if she wins it.
Well, if she can get through...
I'll tell you what,
Who's she playing in the fourth round?
It was going to be Zabur, but it'll now be the Greek woman who played today.
She is playing Osaka.
Oh, sorry, yeah. I was just going to say, her biggest, in my opinion, her biggest competitor is Naomi Osaka. Yeah. I mean, she's seeded 14. But
yeah,
she's
I think that's the fourth round. Champ.
Is it? Okay.
The winner of that probably wins it.
Yeah, well, Sakkari, the Greek fifth seed today, she's going to be tough to beat as well.
Okay.
More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairns' most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. I'm just about to be joined by Ryan Harris, the former Aussie fast bowler, to talk all things Ashes. Jared, I just thought, given it's my first day back in a while.
A long while.
Jeez. I'm going to put my hand up here, and I think that you should join me in putting your hand up. Do you remember a couple of months ago when we sat here going,
Yes, we did.
England a good value. England a good value to win the series.
Don't bring that up, Scoot.
We talked about, geez, the bookies have got this wrong. Australia $1.30. I wouldn't go near this with a 10-foot pole. It ended up being one of the most one-sided series we can ever remember. Certainly one of the most one-sided Ashes series that we'd ever remember. Anyway, I just thought we tend to gloat about
did
our
we
wins.
Say that?
So we should probably own our losses. let's go to a man who took 113 wickets at test level for Australia, just at a beautiful average of 23.5. It's not quite Scott Boland figures, but then again, no one has those either. Ryan Harris, welcome to you.
G'day, boys. How are we? And no one's going to have those figures for a long time to come. I think he's been unbelievable, hasn't he, Scotty Boland?
Should he retire now and become the greatest test bowler of all time?
Yes. Why not? What a story, I mean, for him. You know, for someone who's, you know, played away or bashed away at first-class cricket for such a long time and to get an opportunity that he probably thought he, you know, wasn't going to get with the bowling attack that we had and, you know, with Joe Richardson bowling well in Adelaide and, you know, he got that opportunity and it's fair to say he's taken it. And again, it's for someone like Scotty, you know, as I said, spent so much time doing his apprenticeship in first-class cricket, it's fantastic to see someone get results like that.
So possession is nine-tenths of the law and it's nine-tenths of selection. I'm only an amateur observer. He looks a better bowler to me than Joe Richardson. So why is he behind?
I guess when I say behind, but you know, Joe played in front of Scotty. You know, that was why that is. I'm not sure. I don't think he is now. I think they're sort of different bowlers. I think Jai's more of an attacking bowler. So, you know, I think the reason why, well, my point of view, the reason why they brought Scotty Boland in when Josh Hazlewood went down, they needed someone, to do what Josh does so well and bowls that great line and length. He's relentless at, you know, attacking the stumps and the pads and all that sort of stuff, exactly what Scotty does. So that was why I think they went that sort of swap and went that way. They needed someone to be able to do that with Cummins, who's obviously quite attacking, and Stark's very attacking as well. So to bring someone like Scotty in and to do the role that Josh has done so long for Australia so well, you know, it's amazing to see what Scotty did and how he did it when he came in, got his opportunity.
The crumbling, the debacle that was the last hour and a half for England yesterday, Ryan, I think they lost, 10 for 56. Can you just tell us, as a guy that's been there, is there any better feeling than I guess, A, bowling, but B, just being part of a team where it just feels like every single ball you might get someone out?
Yeah, it is a great feeling. And, you know, I guess it happened. We had probably to that extent. We had a sort of sense of it when I played in 13-14 with Mitchell Johnson, the way he was bowling.
Yeah,
it just felt every time he bowled a ball, you knew that he was probably going to get a wicket. But the feeling of it around, you know, the adrenaline starts pumping, and obviously you know as well, you're coming into the last. You're in the last test match of the series, so you know you're gonna sit down afterwards and have a good celebration and have a good beer with your mate. And,
yep.
So all that ties into it. But when you're out there and when that's happening, you're right, it's an amazing feeling. To be honest, they probably didn't expect it to be finished like yesterday. England actually started off all right, and then obviously the carnage happened, which we saw a lot of during that series with the way they batted. They were very poor, no doubt about that.
Without being too nasty, Ryan, are you surprised how little resilience the English team showed across the series? Just when you were talking about when the going got tough.
Yeah, I am. And, you know, looking coming into this series, I thought, the way they were talking, you always talk positive, you're never going to talk negative, especially publicly, but the way they were talking, they'd come off playing some reasonable cricket, had a captain that was in great form. They obviously had a few guys that hadn't played here before, but played in an Ashes series. A lot of the players that were playing it, so have been out here and played, you know, all different forms of cricket. So got used to the conditions. So the way they were talking it up, you know, it was almost like they were, you know, they're up for the challenge. They're going to be up for it and ready for it. But they showed the opposite. But that's the opposite. And as you say, it was poor. And I think just listening to some commentary around, you know, in the media from the Englishmen, even the press or old ex-players, that was probably the most disappointing thing, is that they didn't show any fight. And it's exactly what you know, what you look for when you're, you know, touring in different countries is really, really hard. No doubt about that. But you've got to show some sort of fight, and they didn't have that at all. So I was really surprised. You know, and again, what we saw last night, that just shouldn't happen. And they've got to be better at that. And they usually are. It's just strange that they didn't, you know, turn up this time.
Can I ask you, Ryan, what time the head trainer or the physio would have picked up the phone and booked the first seven tees at Barn Boogle?
I'll be very disappointed if the boys didn't head down there today for a game of golf.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been there, certainly. But at what point in the game do you reckon he would have said, righto, we're on tomorrow, there's no question. Maybe a late start because the celebrations will probably be fairly intense.
11 AM tee offs.
Yeah, a couple of 11 AM tee offs, and we'll just sort of whip through and... we'll probably taste a bit of the local red about 4:30.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, look, going on last night, he probably could have done it as soon as they lost the first couple of wickets, the way it went. it was just phenomenal. But I hope they did get out there today. Hopefully, as well, they had a good celebration, because you always want to make sure you work hard and build up and work really hard getting into the series. I hope the boys had a good celebration last night.
Who'd be the best celebrator in the team right now?
Oh, right now. I've been out of it a bit long now. Yeah. So,
just name one.
I've had some good mail come through about this recently. I am told that the first two are quite comfortably Steve Smith and Alex Carey.
Are they?
I've heard that.
Yeah, that's not bad. Alex Carey doesn't want a beer.
Yeah. Good GWS boy.
I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think now who would do it. I'm sure. Look, Davey Warner's got his own. He's got everything. He's got his own brewery and everything now. So I'm hoping... He would have put some.
He just drinks the seltzers now. He'd be a seltzer man, Ryan. I think you'd be more of a lager sort of guy.
I'm a lager guy. Don't worry about that. And a red wine guy. I'm definitely not a seltzer now.
Usman Khawaja, one of the stars of the summer, albeit in a very brief appearance. He goes to Pakistan. Does he go as the opener, or do they somehow reshuffle?
That's a really good question, Jared. Probably not. He's not bad at spin. He plays spin pretty well. So he may do that. I felt a little bit for Marcus Harris. He to get dropped. Obviously, you know, Aussie I think deserved to take that spot, but he just didn't quite nail that big score that he needed. He had plenty of opportunities. Obviously, he got a good 76 in England, in Melbourne again. You know, and that was tough, tough conditions. So. But yeah, it's a dilemma, I guess, the selectors have got, and to see what they're going to do is going to be interesting. As I said, he's a really good player of spin, probably one of our best players of spin. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go, and I wouldn't be surprised if there might be a few different selections, I reckon, for the Pakistan tour or the subcontinental tours, because they, you know, someone like I'm not saying, you know, Glenn Maxwell hasn't played red ball cricket for a while, but someone like that who's who's also very good in those conditions. They'll pick guys for the conditions. So
it's time he got back into red ball cricket.
Yeah, we've got him on the show tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Well, he needs to play some red ball stuff. He hasn't played anything. He's played red ball cricket for years. 2.5 years. So, but you know, someone like that, there might be a couple of left field selections, which you know, from afar, it'll be a bit, you know, what's going on here. But they'll pick guys they think who are going to perform in those conditions. I think we've got a little bit of depth that we're able to do that now too, which is really positive.
Speaking of selections, as we let you go, you can only pick one Australian fast bowler to bowl for your life tomorrow. Who's their best?
Oh, I'm gonna say Hazelwood. Oh, bowling there too. I'm gonna go Hazelwood. He's done it for so long. He's done so many good things for so long, and he's just, you know, you wind him up and he just goes, and he's so consistent. So I'd probably say Josh Hazelwood, just with a Scotty bowling close second.
And are you confident they will take Stephen Carey to the subcontinent as keeper?
Alex Carey, yeah. I think they will. Yeah, I think he's. Look, he had a bit of a rough, you know, little patch, I guess, in Sydney. I know Alex well. That'd really bother him, those little errors that he made, and he's a very hard worker. So, but I also know as well. I went on a tour a few years ago with Josh Inglis to India, and I can tell you now, his hands over there to their spinners, a couple of practice games we played were unbelievable. So, I think they stick with Alex. You know, they need to give him a good run at it. But again, there's always going to be pressure on with someone like Inglis in the wings. Even James Pearson up from Queensland is not a bad little keeper either. So there's going to be pressure, and there's guys, you know, if you put pressure on guys that are in the team, that should hopefully make them play better. And if they're playing better, that means the team's going really well.
Ryan, great to have you on. Go enjoy Lager on us.
Don't worry about you now. Thanks, guys.
Ryan Harris there, former Aussie fast bowler. People forget, Jared, very quickly how good that man was.
Oh,
I mean, 113 ball. Wickets at test level. And think about the guys that he was keeping out when he was playing as well, at an average of 23. Whew, that's good going. One day average of 18, by the way, just in case you're wondering. Ryan Harris there. More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. You can enjoy the Tassie summer in your brand new Wilson home. Well, this is where the big dogs come out to play, Jared, and there are none bigger than Roger Rashid when it comes to the Australian Open.
Yes, indeed. He's a very intelligent man, and he's got contacts from the ground to the top. And
he joined us earlier in the show.
As Scoop rightly said, you've seen it in football, you've seen it in tennis. Everything self-rejuvenates, and one player retires, another one comes along, and we may have one on court right now, and Kokkinakis. But in many ways, it was just great to have clear air for the Australian Open to get underway.
No, I 100% agree. I just think today has been a brand new day. Everybody started immediately when the decision was handed down to talk about the tennis and looking forward to day one. And I've already commentated two matches. I've got a 7 o'clock match to do as well. And around the grounds, there's just excitement. You can hear the roar of the fans. On the court three, there was some really great excitement with the young Australian getting through in four sets. And against Lloyd Harris in South Africa. So there's a whole lot of, I think it's just, you know, the reality is, sports people and the fans, etc. It's just business as usual because the players are just lacing them up. They're going out and they're staying in their lane and they're doing their thing. And to just be able to focus on tennis, as you're quite rightly said, Jared, if it was still hanging and it had have gone the other way, I just think today wouldn't have been a great day. And we would have just been dealing with it right throughout the course of the tournament.
Oh, absolutely. As much as Craig Tiley desperately wanted to get him here, I'm sure he desperately, well, in fact, I think he should have been desperately wanting the decision to go the way he did, because otherwise
relief.
The whole tournament would have been just a debacle about this bloke.
Yeah, completely agree. Hey, Roger, as a coach, I'm fascinated by the Kokkinakis. I mean, Jared thinks he can go deep into the second week. We know his best is great. As a coach,
got to get through the first round.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, he's serving to stay in the first set at the moment at 2-5 against Jannik Honfman. As a coach, how do you try to avoid the come down factor that would be natural for a guy just winning his first ATP tournament and then coming into, you know, an opening round at a slam?
So first of all, I think you've got to celebrate that win. If you had just said, okay, I've got to focus, I've got to get to Melbourne and on the flight, which he did, and then practice tomorrow, got to go out, got to enjoy the win. He obviously wouldn't have had a lot of time to do that, but it's something new, it's different. All of a sudden, the focus is back on him. So you must let that just take its natural course. And then once you're here at the Australian Open, there's the beauty about the Australian Open is there's energy. So it's not like he's had to jump on a plane and go and play somewhere else where he might not have been on a show court, there might not have been a whole lot of energy in the air. So now there's the same energy. So, look, I wouldn't have spoken too much about it except to just try and engage in sort of some routines when we turned up on a Sunday, relax, take it pretty easy, actually. Sunday would have been, for me, probably about a 30-minute hit before today. And maybe not even, you know, just to get a feel for the balls, the condition. He's been in Adelaide for 2 weeks. And then basically shut down and get ready to play today. But you know what? It's a different opponent, different environment, different expectations. And he's dealing with a whole new world as he enters the Australian Open this year.
So even if he loses the first set, I mean, you're allowed to invest a set in getting your head right and getting yourself back. And I mean, ultimately, you've still got to win, but he's up against a qualifier. Couldn't have got a better draw, really, to get himself through that.
Jared, did you suffer from the come-down factor? Like, is it a thing across all sports? If you had a really good day, you know, in the midfield, the next week, was it harder to get up? Or if you had a huge come-from-behind win as a team?
I think there's all of that. I mean, I think whether it's a team or a player, I mean,
it would be harder to deal with that personally, though, as a player, right?
Week in, week out is the most difficult element of sport. I mean, you reach a standard.
It's like the bet. It's why the best of the best, right? They can just turn up and they just hit the repeat. It's why the stars just, you know, we take it for granted. We take for granted for what Rafa does, what Ash Barty's doing at the moment, what the greats of the game, when they hit the repeat button and turn up every day and their practice sessions are elite there, you know, it's just really high end. That is something enormously special. We take it. I think we just we take it for quite granted. So for Thanasi to go through all that, yes, he might drop the first set. He might come back and, you know, hopefully he comes back and wins. If he doesn't happen to do that, because there's an opportunity, you remember the qualifier, he's played three matches to get here. So he feels really confident, seeing the ball like a football. It's a moment for him.
Yep.
Understands Kokkinakis has actually won a title. There might be a little bit of a letdown. There's also 2 weeks of tennis, so there could be a fraction of fatigue setting in. Who knows what that looks like? And so he walks on court and says, okay, I need to lock in and get a good start. If I get a good start, I'm in a not a bad position, and that looks like what he's done so far.
The one thing we've missed right throughout the discussion on Novak Djokovic is the court and the ball speed. I take it they're all good because no one's complained about it.
No, well, we haven't had airtime for it, Jared. It's actually taken away a lot of the airtime and the paper to be written on. But look, I think it's a very good all round court. It's just watching today, I did a Seb Korda match, who's Peter Korda's son. I mean, what a family that family is. Yeah. They got
golfer, you know,
just
tennis
amazing.
Player.
But yeah, he's actually just the third wheel. He's just the he's the brothers are sitting in the corner. We're the show, the two daughters. But and he was able to serve volley. He was using his slice. He played quite a fast game. He beat Cam Norrie, the number 12 seed. So I think we're going to see a bit of everything, and the conditions will play a part. And if Thanasi gets through, for example, he's got to win now in four or five sets, and he has Rafa in front of him the next round. So it's not, again, you know, there's a physicality side of it. But yeah, look, the stadium looks fantastic. The new court, Kia Arena, is out unbelievable. That's where I commentated my first match, and that's going to be a great show court with a lot of atmosphere. And the fans, they're all amped up. And hopefully we get as many fans as we can have as capacity throughout the course of the next fortnight.
Great to hear from Roger. That does us for our Monday edition of Sports Day. We'll be back tomorrow.